Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. It is February 28th, last day of February. I can't believe it already, 2022. And it seems to me I just said that it's the first day of February, so I guess that's good news because where I live here in Maine, although I like it all year round, it is winter time, and you move into March, you have hope for spring. So we'll see what happens, but I hope everybody had a good February and an even better March. And here's to wishing the people of Ukraine well. I don't normally bring up that kind of stuff here on the show, but that whole thing is really just bugging me that this could happen in modern day Europe and attack people for no reason. So I wish them well, and I hope this all gets settled so that by the time I say it's March 1st, excuse me, yeah, by the time I say it's April 1st, a lot of this is behind us, and I'll move off that subject in just a second. It's just been on my mind. We have a nice show today here on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. By the way, if I didn't mention, I'm Larry Jacobs, and your host for today, as always, and we're going to be talking to Patty West-Smith. Patty is the Director of Customer Engagement at our good friends over at Turnitin. Turnitin, just like it sounds, turnitin.com. And we're going to talk about, and this is what they are experts in, is feedback, how to use feedback in the form of student essays, student testing, and what do we really want out of that? How do we measure it, so to speak, and how do we move students to the next step? So we're going to talk about where to next feedback, which is part of a Turnitin Feedback Studio white paper, and Patty's the expert in this, so we'll get into that. Let me just do a little homework first. We're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That is our home website for equity and access. We're going to talk about that today. Our magazine over there, it's an online journal. It's called Equity and Access. Please enjoy it. Just click on the cover and flip on through. You'll enjoy all the articles, plus all the articles on site about equity and access, and all of our podcasts are archived over there, as well as a link to our other website, which is seltoday.org, all about social-emotional learning. Check that out. We have a wonderful resource over there of SEL resources that you can use, okay, to help your kids get through, and yourselves, I might add, get through these tough times. So it's really important. Check it all out. Everything's at ace-ed.org. And now we have turnitin.com, and we have Patty West-Smith. Welcome back, Patty. It's Larry here.
Thanks, Larry.
Pleasure to have you here.
Good to be here. I was just looking at the calendar, and I realized it's been just over a year since the first time I was on your show. It doesn't seem like it's been that long.
And I've aged, but I'm sure you have not. Okay? It goes fast, doesn't it? Just ridiculous.
It flies by.
And it seems like 3 minutes ago I was telling your buddy, I can't believe it's February already, and now it's basically March, February 28th. Okay, so. Where are you today?
So I'm in Delaware. I work out of Delaware.
Okay, well, I kind of remembered that, but you could be anywhere these days. When I look at phone numbers of 302, the area code, people could be anywhere these days. So how's the weather in Delaware today, home of Caesar Rodney?
You know, it's not a bad day. It's not a bad day. It's a little chilly, but sunny, and I, like you, am looking forward to March in the hopes that the groundhog was wrong this time.
He's usually not wrong, he's right. But, you know, you have March, you get a little hope for spring. It's coming. It really is.
Right.
Tell everybody all about, before we get into the where to next feedback, Patty, you're Director of Customer Engagement, okay? Which doesn't mean you're like Yenta the matchmaker. It means you want to engage your customers in what Turnitin does, okay? It's not that kind of engagement, okay? Tell everybody what Turnitin does. So they understand where you're coming from. Go ahead.
So, look, if you kind of want to capture it in a nutshell, what Turnitin does is we really drill down on assessing with integrity, right? And so
nice.
The assessing part of that is just covers the entire spectrum of assessments, right? It's not just tests and quizzes, but, yeah, we do some stuff with that as well. But it's every way that a student can demonstrate their learning. And we want to make sure that it's done with integrity. And the integrity piece of that, you know, there's sort of a student side to that, which I think people are most well acquainted with, this idea of academic integrity. But there's also the integrity of the assessment and the assessment tools as well that is sort of the educator's side of the integrity puzzle. And so, you know, every way that assessment and integrity sort of show up in the modern classroom, Turnitin has a little piece, a little thread involved there to really make sure that it all comes together. For me, talking about integrity is not so much about catching anybody doing anything wrong. It's about creating the circumstances to make sure they don't feel compelled to do that so that when we do assess students' learning, we can be really confident that what we have is the best reflection of where that student is at that moment in time. And as I said, that involves the integrity on the student side, but also integrity on the educator side.
Patty, are you there? Yeah, I lost you for 1 second. Okay. No, that's okay. I heard it, but my mic was – I accidentally flipped my mic off for a second, okay? I wanted to make sure you – I could hear you, but I wanted to make sure you could hear me, okay? That was beautifully said, and I have to tell you, you know, we're always talking about kids cheating, okay? But kids kids cheat for a reason, you know? And when you said about the integrity of the test – and the fairness of the test, if I may go there, and the equity, cultural responsiveness of the test, okay? If the test doesn't have a block of integrity behind it, in looking at the students that you are measuring and where you want them to be, it loses its intrinsic value, okay? And I thought that was very well said, the way you said that. It's something people don't think about, but the testing matters, okay? And the way you... Yeah, go ahead, talk, speak.
Well, sometimes assessment gets a bad rap, right? Because folks feel like, oh, well, that's just one moment in time, and sometimes the results of the assessment are used in ways that aren't completely aligned to best practices, and sometimes teachers get punished, and schools get punished, and students get punished.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, as educators, assessment is a part of the education process. It's not separate from instruction, right? Assessment should be driving our entire instructional cycle. If we really look at assessment as just sort of a dipstick, a measure in time of where students are, and then we're thinking about how we use that information to make instructional decisions that are best for our students in our classrooms, no, I mean, when you really think about assessment that way, it's just one more tool that helps us to be better informed and to really make sure that we're meeting the needs of students. If we're not assessing students, then we can't be sure of what they know and what they don't know, which means we're making, you know, sort of fumbling around in the dark when it comes to instruction. And you know, I mean, we just don't have time for that. The demands are so great. We have to use every tool in our toolbox to make sure that we're spending every minute of instructional time wisely. And assessment is really a great avenue toward having better insight into where students are and what they need from us. And so it is critically important, and it is, yes, it can be used as something of a sledgehammer. It can be used as a sledgehammer rather than a scalpel, but when used strategically, when used thoughtfully, when guided by educators who know what they're doing and know how to put that data into work in their classrooms, it is actually one of the things that we have at our disposal that gives us a lot. It's very empowering, really, when you think about it.
And you know, it's interesting. I'm thinking kind of back to when I was in college, which was 47 million years ago, okay? But when I was in education school, okay, we were all trained. It was a teacher's college, okay? And we were all training to be teachers. But I really don't remember, and I admit it's a long time ago. I don't remember what I had for breakfast either, but I don't remember – okay, them actually teaching us how to test and assess. And I don't know if that's really changed, okay, and it might have. What do you hear what's going on? When, as teachers are trained, okay, to be teachers, and as they go through professional development, are they actually trained on how to create a test with integrity? And to and we're going to talk about the feedback part in a second, but are they – you know, we all moan and groan and bitch about standardized tests, but standardized tests are created by, if I may, don't yell at me, everybody, experts, okay? And although I love teachers and I did the same thing as everybody else, how well trained are we to actually do a good testing? Go ahead, Patty.
So it's interesting, Larry, and I've been up on the soapbox a time or two myself, and I've even taught as an adjunct professor in some teacher preparation programs. And I will say this, it wasn't quite 47 million years ago when I was back in my education classes. It was just like, you know, 40 million years ago, not 47.
Younger dinosaurs. That's the difference. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. But you know, with age comes wisdom. So I'm going to hang on to that. It makes me feel better about getting old. I will say it was not a big part of my program. And I think there has been a shift. I think as we as a field have really embraced and understood that one size doesn't fit all, and we have understood that we really need a better read of where our students are on an individual level as well as sort of trends among groups of students to make really smart decisions about our instruction. Yeah. It has, to a certain extent, changed the thinking about assessment. Now, you know, I think high-stakes testing is something different. We have to differentiate between assessment that is a living, breathing part of our instruction and a regular instructional cycle and high-stakes testing, which kind of feels like something that is done to us as opposed to something that is done by us. But,
but
I do think there's a lot more work these days. And, in fact, there are whole programs dedicated to understanding assessment design and what it looks like to effectively assess students and then use the results of the assessment in a powerful way. So I do think there has been a shift. I think, you know, from my perspective as a former curriculum supervisor, as a former developer of assessments, both high stakes and classroom assessments, I think we still have some room to grow, right? There's a lot more that could be done around what it means to develop an assessment that is effective. And I think this whole feedback question is part of this, right? Because what we really want is we want a tool that we know will have an impact, right? And we're going to talk probably more in our conversation today about Dr. John Hattie, but he's a researcher of huge renown. My favorite quote about him, and I'm going to butcher this, and I probably won't be able to attribute it to the right source, which is bad coming from, you know, turn it in. We kind of believe in citing our sources, and I don't have the source right at my fingertips right now, but somebody out there once said about him, he's not a god among educational researchers, but he's the next best thing. And that's the truth. That's the truth, right?
Pretty good.
What his work has done is it's helped to really quantify what the effect of different instructional strategies, different instructional models, different approaches we can take, and really quantify which of those has the greatest impact on student learning. You know, and there's a lot of research about assessment and how formative assessment in particular can be used to drive student learning so effectively. But even in the assessment world and in the feedback world and the rubric world, not all tools are created equally, right? There are good rubrics, there are bad rubrics, there's good feedback. I don't think there's bad feedback, but there's feedback that doesn't necessarily have as big an impact other feedback, and you know, his work in quantifying some of that research and really giving us some actual numbers to say this is where we should spend our time and attention because this is where we know that the work we're doing is actually going to impact student learning. And feedback is one of those areas, right? Feedback is an area where we know the research has clearly illuminated that providing formative feedback is one of the most powerful things that teachers can do to impact student learning. And this research that we worked on with Dr. Hattie actually quantifies not just the effect of feedback overall, but which kinds of feedback will have the greatest impact on student learning. It is really sort of milestone kinds of research that he's done and that we've had the opportunity to partner with him on.
Yeah, and by the way, you co-authored a paper with him. okay? And that was published. Yeah. I just want to give you credit, my dear. In Frontier, that was published in Frontiers in Education. Congratulations on that. Okay?
Thank you.
That's a big deal.
I don't say lightly.
It's a big deal.
Probably the biggest accomplishment of my professional life, I have to say, candidly. I went to my mom and I said, you know, Mom, I didn't finish my doctorate. I never finished that dissertation. But I did publish this research with Dr. John Hattie. I don't think she still was quite happy about that whole not finishing the dissertation thing. But at least this rehabilitated me a little bit in my mom's eyes.
You don't need much rehabilitation. I did put a link to it over at when you're listening to the show, okay, the platform comes up, and I did put a link to it right there in the description of the show. Congratulations. By the way, you just said you didn't finish your doctorate. I want you to know that the University of Larry, a fine organization, gives out doctorates. Okay?
Excellent.
No charge.
Yes.
No charge.
I'm excited
University
about
of Larry,
that, Larry.
Believes in academic freedom, and it's 148 character doctoral thesis, which you can do on Twitter this afternoon. Okay, Dr. Wes Smith, congratulations. Tell your mother.
Thanks,
okay,
Larry.
It'll be done by 5 o'clock this afternoon. The other thing, I wanted to say this to you before I get into the Dr. Hattie thing with you and the whole how Turnitin works with this. You mentioned, you know, you used the term, and I was thinking about it, high stakes testing. All right. Excuse me, I was thinking, you know, when we say that, we think of standardized testing, the big stuff,
mm-hmm.
all right? But
mm-hmm.
in reality, the stakes are pretty high when teachers are testing, okay?
If you're not
testing properly, and if you're not getting the right feedback or understanding how to use the feedback you're getting, all right, those are pretty high stakes, and not necessarily for the educator, but certainly for the student. You can turn off a student. Okay, by not following up on this, by giving the wrong test, et cetera, the stakes are high. Okay, we're really dealing with something that's huge here. Okay, with education, and I think just wanted to make that little point. You know that the stakes are high as we're talking about this. Take what you wrote with Dr. Hattie, all right, and all about feedback. It was published in Frontiers in Education. I have the report. You can link to it on site. But everybody, but put Turnitin in that picture, okay? In other words, how does your company Turnitin, okay, want people to – what do you guys do to help people understand the feedback? Maybe that's the question I'm asking. Just put yourself into all this. Yeah, go ahead.
So I mentioned earlier, Dr. Hattie's been doing some of this work for a good long time. Most people are familiar with his meta-analysis, visible learning.
I agree.
So when you're a guy like Dr. Hattie, you're always looking to refine that research, right? And what do you need if you're going to refine research around feedback? Well, you need to see real live feedback sort of happening in the wild, if you will. Right? Real feedback in the wild. Well, you know, so sometimes this gets overshadowed with Turnitin. A lot of people sort of think about that similarity aspect of the work that we do. But our flagship product, Turnitin Feedback Studio, actually goes far, far beyond looking at similarity, text similarity, and things like that. And one of the major attributes of the system that educators love is this ability to deliver feedback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
inside
Feedback Studio, we have a couple different commenting functions that support giving feedback. We have, you know, regular text feedback that you can type into the system. We've got voice comments, which is amazing especially for students who need, you know, voice comment can be a lot more accessible for students than text-based comments, particularly for students who might have, you know, learning disabilities or things like that. It can be a huge thing for English language learners. But the other thing we have are what we call quick marks, right? And these are these libraries of comments that teachers find themselves having to use over and over again. You know, and Turnitin is used by millions of educators around the world. And so what exists inside our system are all of these comments that real educators in the wild, as I said, have delivered to student takers, right? So we have
Yep.
Tens of thousands of comments that have been left on student papers. And so what Dr. Hattie really wanted was he wanted to know, is there a particular kind of feedback that teachers provide that has a bigger impact on student learning versus other kinds of feedback? And so what we did is we pulled down over 3,000 essays, and what we were looking for is essays that were submitted in a formative way, meaning they were submitted one time, and then feedback was provided by the instructor, and they were resubmitted. So that gives us two data points to compare, right? The initial submission and how that was scored versus the resubmission after the feedback.
That's pretty cool.
Then we took all of the comments, tens of thousands of comments that were issued on these over 3,000 essays, and we categorized them into different kinds of feedback. And what we were able to discover is that what Dr. Hattie calls where to next feedback is the kind of feedback that has the biggest impact on student learning. So when you look at that first draft to resubmission, you see measurable growth and improvement as a result of the feedback that was provided formatively. And where to next feedback is the feedback that delivers the biggest growth in student progression from first draft to resubmission. And all of that came out of our database. All the feedback was delivered inside of Feedback Studio as the tool that helps teachers to then deliver that where to next feedback. So it really was a partnership of his paradigm, his framework around understanding feedback and our data as well as the delivery system, if you will, for this feedback that ultimately impacted student learning.
And when you got the feedback, and I'm going to ask this the right way.
Yep.
When you assessed the feedback, who – this is going to be an odd question, but I take it for the way. Who learned more, the teachers or the students?
Well, you know, that's a hard thing to quantify, right? Who learned more,
yeah,
the teachers or the students? You know, so obviously what we were able to measure is what the student learning was, because we can see that growth from first draft to the resubmission.
Okay.
But, you know, you make a really interesting point in that what educators get out of that is we get to see in real terms where students are, and we get to see what kind of feedback is actually going to make. Yeah, it's going to make the biggest impact. And look, here's the thing, Larry. Teachers are under fire, right? They have so much coming at them. You know, they have so much coming at them. There are so many demands on their time. And crafting feedback is an incredibly time-consuming exercise, right?
It certainly is.
And when you,
it certainly
and
is.
And so what you don't want to do is spend all of these hours, you know, giving up all aspects of your personal life to pour feedback onto students' papers, only to find that it hasn't actually impacted their learning, that they haven't responded to it, that they haven't engaged with it, that it hasn't made a difference. And so what this research allows us to do is take a look at the feedback and say, okay, we know from Dr. Hattie's previous work that providing feedback is a very effective tool. It has a huge effect size on student learning. We've been able to quantify that, and that knowledge has been out there for now over a decade, right? I think Visible Learning was published in 2008.
So that knowledge has been out there for
a long time. But what this allows us to do is to actually look at the feedback itself and say, all right, which kinds of feedback should I put my efforts into? Because at the end of the day, you want to spend your time as a teacher on the things you know are going to have a positive impact on student learning.
Right.
And now
right.
we can point to this research and say, all right, so it's not just random comments, right, out there that are going to make a difference for students. This specific kind of feedback will actually impact student learning more than other kinds of feedback that might be delivered. And that's a big deal, because what it allows us to do is prioritize our time. Where am I going to put my efforts as an instructor? I'm going to put my effort into the thing that I know is going to have the biggest impact for my students. And that's what this research actually quantifies.
Exactly. And my question is, Patty, there's a phrase out there, and the initials are two words, okay? It's CRT in education. One of those is critical race theory. We're not talking about that, okay? The other one is culturally responsive teaching, all right?
Yes.
And now I want to talk about CRF, culturally responsive feedback, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm curious, okay, if when you look at feedback, okay, is there a difference, okay, when you're talking about urban kids, rural kids, people teaching those kids, suburban kids, rich kids, poor kids, whatever. In other words, you have to make the feedback responsive to the kid, okay, and give them the right feedback. That's what we're talking about here. Talk to me about that side of it. It's kind of the equity side of all this, okay, or the Yeah, go ahead.
And Larry, you were so good at tapping into my passions. I remember this happened the last time I was on your show, and we ended up having just a full-on discussion about equity and rubrics. And in this case,
I do remember.
Equity and feedback is another topic that's along these lines, right? And so here's how I would frame it, right? I was a supervisor. I was a principal. I spent a lot of time sitting in other people's classrooms. And when you're sitting in other people's classrooms, one of the things you start to recognize is that there are patterns of behavior. Most of the time, those patterns of behavior are not obvious to either the teacher or the instructor, or the student, or at least not explicitly so. But when you're that third party sitting in the back of the room kind of taking in the landscape, you start to see some things. And so, you know, when I would sit in a teacher's classroom, I would sometimes literally count how many students were responding when a teacher asked a question, how many students actually got called on in a classroom, how many students actually received direct feedback based on their learning. And the sad truth is that it's a small number. It's a small number. If you have 30 kids in a class, you might have 8 students who actively participate throughout the class time. And that means those students are the only ones that are getting direct feedback, right? But what you can do with feedback is that you can start to recognize where each individual student is. Now, I used to advocate for what I called every pupil responds structures, right? Because what that does is it makes sure that every single kid in that classroom is engaging in some way. Maybe it's through an exit ticket. Maybe it's through one of those, you know, clicker programs where everybody has to weigh in.
Yeah.
But that gives the teacher – yep, that gives the teacher insight into where every single student is, and that opens up a prime opportunity because now that every pupil has responded, you have the opportunity to give every student feedback. You aren't just talking to this 3 or 4 kids who have their hands raised, or if you're lucky, 8 or 10, but there are still 20 other kids out there who haven't weighed in a single classroom. But when every pupil responds, it gives the teacher the opportunity to give feedback to every single student, right? So that's step one in terms of where equity comes in. Now you've opened the door and said every student is going to have access to feedback. But you want to go a step further than that. You want to go to the step of making sure every student has access to feedback that is going to directly impact their learning. And that means taking into account where they are in that moment, meeting them where they are, and then trying to move them to the next step in their learning journey. And that's what that title, Where To Next, refers to, right? Like sometimes people are like, Patty, what are you talking about with Where To Next feedback? What does that mean?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the idea, right? In many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, learning is sequential. And what Where To Next feedback refers to is what is the next step in your learning journey? And it's telling students how to get to that next thing that they need to work on, that next thing they need to conquer. Here's where equity comes into play. First, you open the door by saying every pupil responds and now every student has access or opportunity to access feedback. That's the first step in equity because now you are bringing everybody to the table, right? Making sure everybody's in the room getting a chance to get feedback. But the other place that equity comes into play is with this idea that I, based on my assessment, whatever kind of assessment I've used, I now know where each one of those 30 students in my classroom is, and I can provide them the right feedback at the right moment that responds to where they are, not where everybody else is, right? Because when you make a comment and you give you give feedback to a whole classroom of students, not everybody's in the same place. They're not all starting from the same place. Right?
That's right.
But now you've opened up the door to say, where is this individual student? How can I move this child forward to the next step? Where to next? Feedback. And that's really what, that's sort of at the heart of this research, is just to say, how do we find out where each individual student is and move them to the next step on their learning journey?
And I think what's important here, and I'll ask this, you know, Turnitin is a technological product, a computer, a software product, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right? And, which is great, by the way, to get everybody's Turnitin.com, and they have their feedback studio, et cetera. All right? This is that's a key point. And I was thinking as you were talking about this, this is incredibly important. Okay? It really is. And it moves kids literally to the next step. All right? And I got to thinking of an analogy. Of an airliner, okay? And a plane doesn't take off unless there's a pilot and a co-pilot, all right? Because there's a lot to do with an airplane, all right? And one of the challenges we have is that we have to leverage technology because we know all this, thanks to research like you and what Dr. Hattie did. We know this stuff now. But we can't just keep loading this onto teachers without giving them the proper tools to do it. All right.
We need to either
put more people in there to help because we know this has to work, or you use the technology. You know, the plane can fly itself, so to speak. Okay.
Yep.
We use the technology. Okay. To back us up. Talk about that for a second, if you can. Just go on that one.
So look, in the context of this research, Larry, right, like one of the things to look at is Turnitin is not providing this feedback, right? We're not crafting these individual comments that come to students, although we do have some of this where to next feedback that's actually built right into our system that teachers can pull down and use for themselves. They don't have to write it themselves. But most teachers want to. They want to craft the feedback, right? What Feedback Studio allows them to do is to deliver that feedback quickly, efficiently to all students, right? Yeah. We're not taking the place of teachers. Nobody, no tech tool can take the place of a well-educated.
It's a tool. It's a
but
tool.
But man, is it one heck of a tool, Larry, right? It gives you so much more power. Because I'll tell you this, look, I was an English teacher. I spent hours grading papers and putting feedback on student papers, and it was laborious and painful and hard. And one thing every teacher out there knows is that as you're grading papers or providing feedback, every student needs a little bit different feedback, but there are lots of comments that you have to repeat over and over and over again. And if you're trying to write those out on a student's paper, I cannot even calculate the hours that it takes to do that.
Exactly.
But you use a tool like Feedback Studio, you write that comment one time, put it in your library, and now all you have to do is drag and drop it. And we have teachers who have hundreds of comments that they've developed over time that they can modify if they need to, but it saves them so much time to just be able to drag that comment out of their library and drop it on a student paper. They don't have to write it out every time. And that allows them to focus on crafting this where to next feedback, which takes a little more time, takes a little bit more thought, has to be differentiated for the individual student, but they've saved so much time with the technology that now they have time to focus on that. And that's a really big deal. We are literally giving teachers back some of their time. That's why I do this work, Larry. That's why I do this work.
And the time is the key, especially these days when everybody's so understaffed still. It's brutal right
now.
Absolutely. Okay, I can't tell you how important this is.
It's bad out there.
And you said something that struck me, and this always comes up, all right? You said regarding your company, Turnitin, we don't want to replace teachers, okay? And for some reason, the technology in some people's minds, some teachers' minds, they think that's going to replace the teacher. And the best analogy I can give to that is that there's not a carpenter in the world who thinks the power saw will replace him. and that he should go back to a handsaw. Okay?
Yeah,
these are tools.
That's a really good way to capture it. That's a really good way to capture it. I wouldn't work for a company that was in the business of replacing teachers. That's just not who I am. It's not what I believe in.
You're in the business of helping teachers, not replacing them.
Exactly. What I want to do is I want to build the tools and help to put the tools into every teacher's hands that are going to make it easier for them to do their work. Right, and that's really what we're in the business of doing is giving them back that time, giving them the tools that allow them to do their work, to be the experts that they are. You know, I have, obviously as an educator myself, I have a huge amount of respect for educators.
Of course.
But I'll tell you, I've been out of the classroom for a while now, and I watch what is happening for teachers, and if anything, things are getting harder. It's getting harder, and they need us more. They need tech companies to come to the plate and say, let us help you do your work. That's what we're trying to do at Trinity.
And every school, I have to say this, every school district needs to leverage as many technology tools as they can. Because it's harder and harder for teachers. It's actually great. We're getting more and more information about learning, okay, which takes up more and more time. But we can't just load it on people's shoulders without giving them the tools to process it. And that's basically line here. And that's what Tournament does. Patty, this was great. I love that. We got to go. This was great, Delaware girl. The future Dr.
Thanks,
Wes Smith. Thanks to the University of Larry, a fine organization. I might add.
I appreciate
congratulations.
You,
Patty, I appreciate you and all the good work you guys do. I got to tell you, it's just great. So thank you. Have a good Caesar Rodney Day. And if people don't know who that is, look it up. Okay?
All right, Larry. Take care.
Thanks, Patty. Okay, you take care, too. Bye-bye. Be safe. Okay, everybody. That's Patty West Smith, the Director of Customer Engagement at my good friends over at TurnItIn.com. And it's their feedback studio. And I have a link to the research where the description is on the website here when you listen to the show, which we will archive at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a good day. Talk to you later.